What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Kind of Funny Games cast. I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Sideshow Collectibles has sent me an email saying the update on our child from the Mandalorian shipping information, and now I got to reset my password. It's one of those things.
It's a whole ordeal.
This is the way.
We need that little baby Yoda. Such is our code. Best hair in the business, Fran Mirabella III.
What's up? Glad to be back.
First time back in a while.
Yeah, a few weeks.
You left
weeks
us
or
high and dry. We had you for our most iconic Nintendo games.
Iconic Nintendo games. That was a spicy little episode, Super Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had Sam Claiborne come through. That was a lot of fun.
I didn't get to watch that. He didn't talk too much shit about you, but. Yeah, I'm sure he talked. Everybody. That's the way, also.
That is.
Okay. Still August to October.
Okay.
The child coming.
Okay, I'm feeling good about that. And then the new face of video games with the new cut.
Yeah.
The fresh cut.
Fresh.
Dude.
Blessing at AOEA Junior.
I've never worked above a barbershop before, and it is an underrated, like, perk to work.
Yeah, sure.
It is
just be able to pop down there.
Yeah, at first I was like, I'm not going to spend that much money for a barber, but I was like, you know what, man, I'm just going to act like I'm also paying bus fare or whatever. I'm just going to add that in.
Yeah,
I would have done that anyway at home. So, like, you know, considering that and considering how good they do,
it gets out.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Real good.
Yeah,
it's damn good. This is the Kind of Funny Games cast each and every week right here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We get together, talk about video games, all the things we love about them. And this week, it's going to be a lot of love. I can feel it. I feel a lot of love already.
This is all excited.
You can get the show on youtube.com/kindoffunny. You can get it on roosterteeth.com. You can get it on podcast services. Just search for Kind of Funny Games cast. You can also get the show ad-free with the exclusive post show by going to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, which also allows you to watch this show live when we record it or be a Patreon producer. Boy, howdy, there's a ton of you this month. James Davis, David Mintel, Mohammed, the nanobiologist, Frank Furter, Talia Floyd, Jesus Berrio, Eamon Martin, William A. Nance, Billy Laporta, Michael Bradley, Robin Wyland, Tom Bach, Jordan Luck, Julian Grudadaria, dope ass name.
Right?
Max A. Blair, Cody Banks, Agent Cody Banks himself, Trent Berry, Jacob Plick III, Thomas J. Meehan, Sancho West, Sean I., Evan May, Stephen Insler, Elliot Kosh, David Norridge, Ben Woth, Adam Bankhurst, Evan Ballard, Keith Lewis, James Hastings, Quade Burnett, Casey Kern, Luke Pattinson, Travis Ray, and Joseph O. Yusuf.
You love to see it.
You love to see it. Greg.
Yeah.
We were talking about streaming Fortnite this week.
We are.
And we were talking about doing like a little nice collab with Sancho West
right
there. I brought that up to Andy, and Andy goes, dude, he's real family friendly. And I was like, oh, man.
Mm. I can do a knockers.
I don't believe you.
Dude, I've been on all sorts of stuff and I don't curse. Mm-hmm. WWE programming? Mm-hmm. Come on. You think WWE's smaller potatoes than Sancho motherfucking West?
See, there we go. There we go, everybody. I love it. You love to see it. Fran, where you been at? Twitch.tv/FM3. What you been up to?
Naturally. I beat Sekiro New Game Plus. And thank you, everybody. A lot of best friends stopped by. They wanted to see that. So, again, what happened, right? I picked a path where it ends a bit early. It's the dark path. That was my first playthrough. So I didn't get to see a bunch of stuff. And I said, I got to do it. Boy, was that tough, but we did it. So very
hell
excited.
Yeah.
Then, are you ready to throw all that garbage away and get ready for the Division 2 Warlords of New York?
Ready.
We're back, baby!
NYC. And I do want to shout out also, thank you to everybody who's been using that creator code in the Epic Store, Fran Mirabella. Seriously, it's still been happening. It must be the best friends, man.
Thank you
guys for the support. Thank you.
That's good shit. You see that everyone else here is playing Bloodborne?
Yeah, wait, I saw Andy was. What's everybody else?
Oh, I'm also playing Bloodborne. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, man. Just beat the Bloodstarved Beast a few weeks ago.
Is this your first Souls game?
Yeah.
So I haven't played these other ones yet, so I'm very excited.
Mm. What's your next step? Are you done with Sekiro?
Yeah, I can't keep playing that right now.
Are you going to immediately move on to another?
So I really want to play Bloodborne. I'm almost certainly going to do that, but I'm like, dang, I know that at some point they're going to announce it's coming, 60 frames, PS5, whatever. Mm. What, 240 frames for all I know.
You'll have to pay for the PS5. You'll get it for free.
What about
Xbox.
That Neo 2?
So there's a chance of Dark Souls 3. And then, yeah, I know Neo 2 people are excited about, but I'll probably
That's
go into
soon.
A Souls game.
Isn't that
so.
Like next week?
But Neo let's face it. Yeah. But Greg already, soon. He hit the nail on the head.
He doesn't have to worry about next week. Division. Next week's taken care of. Mm-hmm. Division 2, Warlords of New York. We're back, baby. Yeah. 10 more
Warlords
levels.
New York.
The other big news is Trials of Osiris is back in Destiny 2. If you don't know what it is, it's a crazy mode that I used to play, Insane Hour. So there's going to be a lot of that happening in mid-March.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah.
How's Bloodborne going for you?
Oh, man. So I've been out of the game for like maybe like a week and a half, maybe like 2 weeks, because I got to an area that just was super difficult. And I just had a talk with Andy actually yesterday, and he was telling me about how he got to that area, and he was like, hey, you don't have to fight people. Just like run past, and you'll be able to like get out of that area. And I was like, wait, really? And yeah, sure enough, like I started playing, and I was like, oh, yeah. Or I didn't start playing it. I looked at gameplay of it, and I was like, oh, yeah. Like literally I can just like walk past two steps over here, and I can get out of the area. And so I plan to go back soon, but so far I'm really enjoying it. Like Bloodborne is one of those games where, you know, it's hard. And everybody talks about how difficult these games are, but I mean, I think anybody could really get into it if they tried. That's what I'm kind of gathering from it. It's also scary, which is the thing that's getting me. Like I'm more so being pushed away by the terror of it and the anxiety of playing it rather than the actual difficulty. The difficulty, I'm like, whatever. It's the horror elements where I'm like, oh shoot.
Oh, really? Horror elements. Yeah. It's not just the anxiety how tough it is.
No, yeah.
It's just that like, it's creepy.
I can deal with hard boss fights. Like, I feel like for me, I play a lot of fighting games, and so I'm used to losing.
Yeah.
And having that quality, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll die to a boss all day.
From Software does weird stuff. I've been wanting to play this game forever. I guess you guys haven't played it, right? So it's actually too bad. I bet you it would have been on somebody's, you know, top 10 out of 10, you know, list.
I've started it a couple times.
I know people, it's like adored.
It's like a what?
Sorry, adored. It's adored by people. I know
adored,
that it is.
Yes,
it
yes,
is
yes,
on
yes.
many people's like top 20.
Yeah. Everybody's always like, you got to power through it. You got to play through the part. You're like, oh, I'm good. If I don't like it right away, why?
Already, Greg's like, I'm not powering through
it. I don't want to power through anything. I want to have fun.
Today, we are talking about what games are 10 out of 10s to us. Big topic. You know what I mean? A hard thing to think about. I want to start this off by saying, what is a 10 out of 10 to you?
I was going to ask this question because that's the thing. Of course, some of the things on here are games I reviewed for IGN and did not get 10 out of 10. So, like, you know what I mean? So, I don't think it's legitimate. Well, I mean, even with that scenario, maybe I should have gone and given Peace Walker a 10. Nobody knows. I do know. I should have. I was a coward.
Well, let me ask you. So, what to you is a 10 out of 10, and how does that differ from what a 10 out of 10 to IGN means when you are reviewing for them?
Well, I do regret my Peace Walker score. It should have been a 10 out of 10. I did 9.5, and that was a cowardly move, and I apologize to everyone. Stand by Uncharted 3, though. I mean, I think at IGN, you're trying to be more, and Frank can back me up on this, you're trying to be more objective, critical. You're trying, you know what I mean? Like, you're not letting fandoms get in the way or how much you like one aspect. Like, can it be that you love the single-player aspect so much, but the multiplayer was totally garbage in a cash in like IGN, I think that affects the overall score, whereas here I think you could be like, it's 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I think there's a lot. I think the big difference, how I would put it, is when you're working in a place like IGN, well, number one, it was a 100-point scale, which just sort of changes the way that you would. There's going to be very few 10s, in my opinion, if like there's 100 points you can give. Like, why wasn't it just a 99? It did have this little issue.
Speaking
right?
of, what's a 99 to you, friend?
People give me a lot of crap for Double Dash obviously being a 7.9.
Totally outrageous.
But little did they know, the first that
was it you that
just shy of maybe a perfect score was Majora's Mask.
Oh, okay.
You're thinking of Jade Empire, aren't you?
No, I'm thinking of Grand Theft Auto San Andreas.
Oh no, that wasn't me. Is that Chris Roper or somebody?
Somebody gave that a 9.9. I want to see them.
But so, you gave Majora's Mask a 9.9.
Yeah, I mean, they came out, you know, a couple years after Ocarina of Time, and rightly so. I was like, this game's really incredible. I think some people are going to dig it. Some people won't, but it's really amazing. And for various reasons, I was like, not a 10.
So do you think a 10 out of 10 needs to be enjoyed, to be enjoyed by anyone?
So, you know, the way I was going to sum this up was like, IGN, you think a lot about people's like pocketbooks and like, man, they got to spend money. And also it was 100-point scale. So different world. I feel like on this show, and hopefully that's what it is, it's like, this is our personal.
Absolutely.
Like, there's this sentimental, personal element of now I'm looking back and I can say, oh, that game's a 10. I can look back on something that I never reviewed and say, oh, that game's a 10. So it's a little less review and more like a personal list of like these perfect games in your mind.
Is Majora's Mask a 10 to you now?
No, it didn't make my list. It's an incredible game, but I have a huge list, by the way.
Yeah.
But that's what happened to me. I'm like, oh, now I can look back and I'm like, I have this huge list of games that I now think about as these 10s that I actually wouldn't have given a 10 when I reviewed them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
There's sort of this longevity to them as well.
Bless.
So this was a fun thing for me to think about this week as we're kind of ramping up towards this games cast, because I have like an ever growing and evolving document of games that I have that I just refer to as my favorite games, right? It's the document that's literally called my favorite games of all time. And whenever I play a game where I'm like, this is worthy of that list, I add it on. And it's just like a list of 50 games. I'm like, these are my favorite games. This is like my favorite 50 games. That said, there are games in my top 10 that I wouldn't or there, yeah, there are games in my top 10 that I wouldn't say are a 10 out of 10. And there are games that are lower in my list that I would say are a 10 out of 10. And I think the reason, I think the differentiator for me is there's a certain, like Greg said, there's like a certain objectivity to it. And I think, you know, that's a word you can use, but I feel like there's also like a certain level of this is an achievement or this is something that individually does something that's amazing. And so I actually wrote down a few definitions.
Go for it. Before you get into the definitions, you're talking about how there's some games that are on your list. They're not in your top 10, but you'd say that they're 10 out of 10. Do you think that there are games that are on your 10 out of 10 list that aren't on your favorite games list?
Ooh. All these games are in my top 50. But, spoilers, I have Inside on my list. Inside isn't a game that's, like, in my top 20, right? But Inside is a game that I would say is easily a 10 out of 10 because it is just a supremely polished, amazingly made game, right, that accomplishes every single thing that it does, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
DK64 is in my top 15, right? Jet Force Gemini is in my top 20. Those games aren't 10 out of 10s, right? But, like, I think those games, one, I have that connection with those games, right, that makes it.
No.
Don't get ahead of yourself and put DK64 in the non-10 out of 10 list, bless.
It's like a 9.8.
9.8, y'all motherfuckers.
It's a similar thing where I went through game of the year lists, right? Making sure I was, am I forgetting something? Am I going? And I was surprised to see games I put on this 10 out of 10 list weren't my games of the year. Like, mm-hmm. they weren't getting my number one nod for what the best game that year was.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so, like, I have three definitions of what makes, for me, a masterpiece or a 10 out of 10, right? Number one, games that display an exceptional amount of excellence and polish across multiple fields, i.e. story, gameplay design, level design, music, technical performance, et cetera, right? So something like that for me is God of War or Last of Us, right? Like these are games that across all fields achieve what they're trying to do and, you know, have an exceptional level of polish, an exceptional level of like, oh yeah, the story is amazing, the gameplay is amazing, the camera work is amazing, like every single, all these different facets of these games are polished and just pristine, right? That makes a 10 out of 10 game to me. The second definition I have is games that exceptionally innovate on a mechanic, system, or feature in a way that will go on to influence a large number of games to come after, i.e. Mario 64 or Breath of the Wild, right? Where Mario 64 is an easier one to use as an example because, like, that's a game where we can see how that game influenced other games, right? Like, Mario 64 might not be, like, a perfect game. Mario Odyssey, for example, like, is just Mario 64, but, you know, it's more modern, more polished, more mechanics, more all these things, right? But I think Mario 64 is more of a 10 out of 10 games because it went on to then influence how 3D games will work and 3D games will exist, right? Like, that game figured out the camera, that game figured out analog movement, that game figured out 3D level design for platformers, figured out all these different things. And so that game's a 10 out of 10 for me because of how well it innovates and, like, defines what games are going to be moving forward. And then my third definition is games that are uniquely special as a work of art. This can be due to a touching story that transcends what other games have aspired, gameplay design that is uniquely fresh and captivating, and engaging beyond anything else within its genre, or other qualities or a combination of qualities that set the game apart. So I'm thinking of games like Undertale, Nier Automata, Hellblade, which, right, like, it's going to differ from person to person, like, what makes that game a 10 out of 10, but for me, like, you know, Undertale is a game that I think touches a lot of people because of how well-written that story is and how unique that game is, and the unique facets of that game for a lot of people make that game a 10 out of 10 in a way that it's kind of hard to limit to this game is amazingly polished or this game is innovative, mm-hmm. right? Like, that game is going to touch people differently. But for the people that it really touches, it's going to, like, be up there, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so, definitely. Like, for all the games that I have on my list, I kind of attribute them to, like, one of those qualities.
Yeah.
And I think, like, you touch on it there at the end, right, of, like, what's a 10 out of 10 to you is what you define this podcast as. And so I think there are games that touch you, right? Like, I think that there's games that I would look at and talk about, obviously, on a different scale, level, systems, that this is a 10 out of 10. Something at IGN, I would give it a 10, right? But on my 10 out of 10 list, I don't think I'm going to put that there. Mm-hmm. You're speaking to something that's incredibly personal and tells you, and for somehow resonates with you in a way that I don't think would shine through necessarily in review.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, it's difficult. Like, I try to just make my list of not limiting it all and just, like, any game that I thought of that I'm like, is that a 10? Let's just put it on the list. My list is very long, and I'm kind of like Fran, where, like, I'm surprised at how many games I put here. But then it's an interesting thing where I start looking at the list, and I'm like, well, compared to each other, are these all equal? Are all these all 10s? And that's where it gets complicated for me, especially because, like, what you're talking about, Greg, with it, like, needing to connect with you and the objectivity of it. Like, it's funny for me, there's multiple franchises that come up a couple times, like Mario being an example. And when I really look at it, I'm like, what Mario games do I consider a 10 and why? That, to me, starts to define what is a 10 out of 10 to me, because it they aren't necessarily my favorite ones. And it's not necessarily the one that took it the furthest, like, in innovation, but it's the ones that, like, do all these other things. And it's going to be, it's gonna be like, a fun conversation.
For me, there's a 10 out of 10 on my list that is, like, easily, for me, I think is a better game than all the rest of the 10 out of 10s. And it's like a hard thing to kind of pull together, because I'm like, okay, does that make it, does that mean that this game's a 10 out of 10 and all these other games really aren't 10 out of 10s? Or is it just like, well, really, it's an 11 situation?
Yeah, it's
like,
funny.
Go for it.
I was just going to say, in sort of like a weird, bizarro Fran world, I'm like, more on the same page with you. I'm like, it's just freestyle Solon as I'm looking through, like, this list of, like, all these iconic games in the past, and, like, maybe more specifically, too, like, I was more like the 10-point scale on this one. It was like, yeah, I get to look back, and I'm allowed to, you know, and as someone who used to review, and so I'm like, I can now just say, yeah, that's a 10, and not have to worry about it with the pressure. So it's weird. That's where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
It feels like maybe that's where you were coming
from. Yeah, kind of. It's to a point, but I also feel then, once I'm looking at the list, I become a lot more critical. Like, an example of that for me is Smash Brothers. Undeniably my favorite franchise of all time, and I think that it's undeniable that Ultimate is the best. Like, when you look at it, especially now in terms of playability, in terms of the balance, in terms of the roster, it's still growing, all this stuff. But there were issues with it. When I compare it to other Smash games, it's like the single player was lacking. The spirits were not as engaging as trophies. Like, there were so many things that I kind of ding it for that they should have got right. That I look back and I'm like, Melee is a 10. Exactly. Like, Smash Melee is a 10, and it is one of my least favorite Smash games.
Yeah.
But it's a 10.
Yeah. Like, it's funny.
Like, and it's a 10, but it's a 10 to me.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the thing. Mm.
That exact example I have on my list, and it's like Super Smash Brothers Melee, Super Smash Brothers Melee. I didn't even hesitate. That I'm like, that's a 10. And then I was like, oh, wait. And in parenthesis, I was like, Super Smash Brothers Ultimate ? And, like, that's exactly what happened to me. But, you know, my pick was Melee just for a variety of reasons.
I think it gets hard because I feel like with Smash Brothers, at a certain point, and I know, like, these are numbers, right? But are we being too mathematic with it? Whereas, like, is Melee being a 10 out of 10, you know, because it didn't have, like, a World of Light there to kind of bring it down, even though...
But it had Adventure Mode, and that Adventure Mode was dope. When you look back on it, compared to, you know, things that happened after, it's not as dope. But at the time, and I feel like as a full package of Melee, of, like, what that game had you do, and the way that it, like, kind of, like, led you to get the trophies and stuff, like, via playing those modes over and over and over, all those elements remained a 10 out of 10 for me throughout the entire experience, you know?
Yeah, I'm definitely not, you know, full disclosure, like, I'm not going to compare my list with each other. That's me personally. I'm like, then my whole list would be screwed up, like saying, well, which one of these is truly a 10?
But my thing
is... So I don't know if you guys are coming from there, but I'm not. I think
each one of us come from a different place, but for me, I definitely am comparing them, but that doesn't mean that they both can't be 10s. I think that when I'm looking at Smash, it's not just that, oh, Melee's a 10 over Ultimate. It's that when I look at them, I'm like, Melee's a 10 and the others aren't.
Yeah, you know? And maybe more specifically there, it's like, well, you get into, like, wait, if you put Smash on your list... Am I then saying that Melee is the absolute best of them because it's the only one on my list that's a 10? And again, personally, I'm like, I didn't really go to that depth here.
Mm-hmm.
This is more about my 10s.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Let's start doing the list.
Before we do, we do have breaking news.
I'd like
to go back to October 25th, 2004.
Oh, no.
At 3:30 p.m., IGN posted their review of Grand Theft Auto San Andreas with the subhead, the best PlayStation 2 game ever. And it was written by the one and only Jeremy Dunham. Of course, the man who gave me my start in the industry, co-founder of Podcast Beyond alongside of me, a million other things now over at Psyonix, a big wig.
Never playing Rocket League ever again.
I did what I do best, Tim, and hit up Jeremy Dunham on text message. And I said, are you available for a phone call? We have an emergency. And he said, I am not. I am a very important person now at a video game company. I'm in a meeting. And I'm like, I got you. Here, stop listening to your meeting. Blessing wants to throw hands. All right. He's mad. And he's like, what about? I'm like, San Andreas. He's not, he can't believe you gave it a 9.9, right? To which Jeremy responds, you can tell him I stand by that rating.
What?
Now, hold on. Here, it's going to take a turn. It's okay. Going to take a very interesting turn. He started getting into, it was almost 20 years ago, the scope of it, the feel, the ambition was unmatched. Plus, I was a teen. And I'm like, no. He's not saying you overrated it. He's saying it deserves to be a 10.
Perfect.
Here's where it gets very spicy as we start this.
Oh.
I couldn't give it a 10 because our definition for ratings was different back then. It has changed multiple times since then. And since I have OCD, I was a stickler for definitions. And I was like, oh, man, do you even remember? And he's like, no, it was 16 years ago. I don't off the top of my head remember one thing. But I think that was still when it's masterpiece
tens.
Now. It used to be masterful when I started in 2007.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
So I don't even know what it was, what a 10-10, if it would have been masterful, if it would have been something different.
I think it was masterful, but it was like similar to the definitions you're talking about.
I think it was like it was perfect.
And frankly, it's like we know that. Whatever, the camera had problems in San Andreas, and it's like
you had some glitches.
Sure, and it had
you can't use the D-pad drive. Hated that.
Yeah, really? It had enough like things going on, you know, that it just wasn't perfect technically. Maybe
before we actually get into the list, because this is fun here. These words that IGN would describe, and I feel like IGN would use this kind of a standard, obviously because we were all there, but also just they have a good review scale.
Yeah,
the words masterful, masterpiece, and they're obviously evolving and changing based on, you know, how this whole process works. But a perfect 10, like the word perfect, right? I feel like a lot of critics can kind of like be like, well, nothing's perfect.
That's why it wasn't, the word wasn't perfect. But, in fact, I think we had a meeting about that where I was like, well, we can't call it perfect.
I'm throwing it out there. But I just want you guys to be thinking about this as we start doing the our list ourselves.
Sure.
Are any of these games
perfect?
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great thing. And before then, I'd like to read you an email that I got that I have now been put into a very special club that I think is going to speak to you, Tim Geddes, as a game player, and me, Greg Miller, as a fat guy. Hi, Greg. I'm reaching out to you on behalf of my client, Butterfinger. And we wanted to see if you would be open to receiving a special gaming-related mailer from us. You exemplify what it means to game better with Butterfinger. We're proud to share that we have partnered with Square Enix in promotion of Final Fantasy VII Remake. The mailer we're sending you exemplifies our shared love of gaming.
Fuck yeah, man.
And so I hit him like, yeah, starting March 3rd with the purchase of any two Butterfingers, Baby Ruth, or Crunch Bars, Final Fantasy VII Remake players can register online to receive a dynamic theme for their PlayStation 4 featuring fan favorite character Tifa Lockhart. Participating players can also earn and redeem codes to download items that enhance characters in the game when it releases on April 10th. Up to 5 different pieces of in-game armor and accessories that boost stats and abilities will be available, with more powerful items awarded after every code redemption. In-game content offer supplies last.
I love the world. You know, when you think Final Fantasy, you think Butterfingers.
I do. Look at that. Unlock your DLC. Look at Cloud with a Crunch Bar.
Oh, my God. that is very...
Remember Final Fantasy 15 with the ramen?
I was gonna, that is like a very Final Fantasy thing, right? Didn't Final Fantasy 7 have a partnership with like Pizza Hut?
Probably.
They had a demo on the...
They probably.
Pizza Hut disc. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's what I was thinking of. Yeah, the demo. So that's kind of up there.
Here's Nestle Crunch part of this too, though.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, that's all part of this. Family. It's Nestle. It's Nestle. Yeah, because it's Ferrero USA Incorporated, part of the global confectionery company Ferrero Group. Today announced a partnership with Square Enix to bring Final Fantasy VII Remake players dynamic. Quote, Square Enix is the perfect partner to help us get gamers excited about our delicious products, said Sylvia Borla, Vice President of Marketing at Ferrero Chocolate Brands. This partnership is an important next step in connecting Ferrero to the world of gaming. And it worked. Here we are.
Here we are.
And I love Nestle Crunch.
Yeah.
Greg
Miller.
That's
my opinion of those.
What's a 10 out of 10 game?
Now, I know you're going to call this 10 out of 10, what's it mean to you, kind of funny games cast, blah, 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 blah. You also could have called this hashtag Hard Truth Part 2. All right? Because there's going to be some hard truths in here, pills people got to swallow. All right? And I understand how people feel about games, certain games, the biases that are carried with them, the popular opinion of certain things. Your first hard truth is simple. What is a 10 out of 10 to Greg Miller? It is a game that I would say, and I don't say this lightly, and I will defend it as we argue today, is a perfect game.
Whoa.
Is a revolutionary game. Has changed video games in our lifetime in the past few years and will continue to be reverberated throughout time. Fortnite. Fortnite is a 10 out of 10. Battle Royale, of course. I'm not talking about Save the World. Andrew, Renee, get the fuck out of here. We're talking about Battle Royale, right? And just this past week with season two for chapter two starting. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah, I'll jump back in. I didn't play any of chapter two so far, and I haven't played since December 2018, right?
Oh,
that's
wow.
Right. Yeah, like because I got addicted to it, right? Like during that time when it was kind of like my DC universe and stuff, where mm-hmm. I'm like in and out,
ebb the flow.
And jumping back in this past week, in a time where I'm super excited for Animal Crossing, and I'm super excited for Division 2, and I'm super excited for Doom, and like all these things that are close but not here. And so it's that, I try the games I have, I jump into for a while, and I'm like, that's not what I'm feeling, right? Fortnite is perfect in the way that Fortnite is designed to either eat up all of your time or as one match, as much time as you want to give it. Playing this thing, I cannot not be amazed by it. The technical achievement this game is, playing on my PlayStation 4, then, you know, we woke up the next day to start watching Love is Blind, and I was like, you know what? I'll try it on the iPad. Sunk my DualShock 4 to it, played it on the iPad. The next day we were still doing it, I was like, I'm going to use that thing and put it on my phone. Did it on the phone, played it. All my progress is carried over. I am never been the frame counting Fran over here, you know what I mean? Doing all these different things.
Fran.
I'm on great Wi-Fi. I'm on to the newest iPhone and the newest iPad. It is running flawlessly. It is running to the point that if I didn't know better, you know, I was somehow...
You're on a newer iPad or whatever?
Brand new iPad, yeah.
It's more powerful than Switch by a long shot.
Exactly. I mean, like, they're so good, and the carryover of my progress, and the one synced account, and the one synced friends list, and the ability to drop in, drop out, do all these different things. Every story you've heard about it being a community gathering place for, you know, kids or whatever, where that's what they're doing now, rather than go to the malt shop or the mall, right? They're just jumping into Fortnite and fucking around, not even worrying about winning. Like, I see that. Like, I was playing this weekend, and our friend Richie, his kids popped on, and they play Fortnite all the time. They saw me, invited me. I joined their group. We did one real squads match, and then they're like, you want to just go to creative? I'm like, I'll do whatever. And we just went to creative and ran around and screwed around, shot shit, and one of their friends joined, and it was like, wow, this is happening. All that aside, like the personal, again, even though it is my personal, why I think it's a 10 out of 10, I think the gameplay is just so good. And I know that Fortnite loves to get shit on. You know, and they don't, I guess. People love to shit on Fortnite. And it's, you know, become so popular and so huge that you just take it for granted that it is that popular and it is that huge. And it is an easy punchline. And when I tweet out an image of it, I get shit for playing it or whatever. And it's like such a gamers throwing their nose up at something that's doing something insane. And then on top of everything I just said, reinventing itself nearly every week, definitely every cycle, you know what I mean, in terms of what their battle pass is going to be, doing all these different things. The fact that it's fucking free. Like, I think we get so caught up in it. It was 2 years ago or whatever. I was back in Chicago for Christmas, and Jen was running around doing something in a Walmart, and me and my dad were there. I don't forget. She needed something very specific. I forget what. So she's off. You know how it is. And me and my dad are just wandering video game aisle, and he's like, so what is the biggest game? And I started doing the thing of like, oh, well, you know, Call of Duty's selling really well. And this is, and I was like, wait, you see this? And I pointed at Fortnite, and I'm like, that game is free. I mean, I pulled my dad's brand new phone. I'm like, you could play it on here right now and download it right now and be into the game and going. And he's like, and it was like explaining to him this thing that's juggernaut, this. And I know so far my why is it a 10 out of 10 is that it's popular and is that it's like done all these things. But that is part of its core, right? And the fact that it's changed how we all see games. It made the battle pass the battle pass. It took... I remember when me and Andrea started Kinda Funny Games Daily talking about PUBG every fucking day. New concurrent record on Steam. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, this thing's insane. This is changing everything. And then when Fortnite totally aped them and came out and just ran away with it, it changed streaming, it changed this. But again, throw all that out the gate, playing it is fun. Playing it is great. The systems they've installed in this, me, Greg Miller, trophy horn number one, who talks about playing games and feeling like, oh man, I'm wasting my time because I'm never going to platinum this and I'm never going to get it, right? No trophies in Battle Royale. I'm still motivated to go in there. I still want to see my level increase. I still want to unlock the next thing in the Battle Pass. They're so great at, you know, here are your daily challenges. Here are your challenges for just in general, all the stuff that's free that'll give you the bonus XP, that'll get the stuff for free. Never put a dollar into this fucking game. And they do it so well that you have people like me that are, when a costume I do want to have pops up, I'm like, oh, here's take the money. Like, you've earned this money. Mm-hmm. I've gotten the fun out of this already. And like, even during this like year off, pretty much, right, it was like, oh, Batman skins, I'll buy it. I have no intention of playing Fortnite anytime soon, but I'm gonna get back to it, because again, you're gonna, even if I don't love biplanes or whatever, you're gonna reinvent this thing and put something into it I really do like. And it's amazing the different ecosystems that exist. You know, playing on the phone this weekend, right, has been so great for me of jumping back in PlayStation 4 was just getting the shit kicked out of me, as you'd expect. And I was never great on PS4. I was always better on Switch. Again, we got into Switch because it was a new audience. You were able to grow with it. Being on mobile and playing it on iPad and iPhone, right, it's giving me that chance to catch my breath and remember, like, when I get shot at to build and stuff. And so when I switched back to PlayStation 4 last night, because I'd been winning a bunch on mobile, and it was that thing of like, all right, how much of it is bots? How much of it is I'm playing with a controller and whoever's playing with their iPad is not? And I'm sure there's a good amount of that, right? Yeah. But it did change the way I play and teach me how to play better, that when I went to PlayStation 4 last night, I was fucking cleaning up. And then, you know, my last match before bed or whatever, I still ended up at number two, but it was close. And it was me building, and it was me making up, you know, my little tower to get to and understand trajectories on it. And then, you know, Scott Lowe hit me up, and we joined and went, ran and did squads for a little bit. And it's just like, that game is so good at what it does mechanically. You know, shooting feels good. I think it. You know, I think when we talk about game design, which isn't as often as you'd expect, I think, but I remember a long time ago talking to somebody about it, and they were talking about Mario, right? And like, and I'm probably Jared Petty, actually. Now that I start to say this, it's Jared Petty. But of what poetry the opening screens of Super Mario Brothers are, right? Because you start going and, you know, the Goomba comes at you and you touch the Goomba and you learn, oh, that kills me. You know, you jump on the Goomba. Okay, I can kill him. You hit the blocks for the first time. Oh, I can smash. Oh, this one has question marks. You know what I mean? Like, you start doing it. Fortnite does the same thing of, like, if you're paying attention to the cues it's giving you, right, of you're running and your crosshairs are super wide, but then you stop and they get closer and then you crouch and they go right on top of each other. And it's teaching you these little things that I think even – obviously, other games have done that. I'm not, you know, accuracy wasn't invented by Fortnite. But the poetry in which this game tells you how to play it and what it does to it. Of even when we first started, right, and we're screwing around and you'd be smashing into a wall and those bullseye pops up. And you're like, why? Oh, you hit it and it goes faster, right? You do these things, it goes faster. You're making less noise if you do this, blah, 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 blah. Like, all that said, it's still just fun to run and shoot things. It is still just fun to team up with your friends and run around and try to win. It is still fun for me to camp and hide. And I do it way less and in a different way than when we first started playing. I use it more as a tactic, and I know I need to build and all these different stuff. But, like, Fortnite last night, I lose, sure, at number two. But I put down the controller, and I was like, I haven't been this energized since I came home. It was a long day of shooting yesterday, right? And we did a bunch of stuff. And so I got home and I was exhausted, but like I felt my heart in my chest. And it's a game that I get no trophies for. It's a game that, you know, when the season's over, the progress will get wiped. Mm-hmm. But like it is that good as core gameplay that your heart is still pounding at the end when you get there.
10.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree with a lot of what you said, and it's easy to take Fortnite for granted. I think mm-hmm. you nailed the. That's exactly what we were going through in the beginning. Was like, man, newer games are so different versus looking back. But anyway, revolutionary, yes. Perfect, no. I wouldn't go. That's a word that, yeah, I'm a little more scared to use, maybe.
Sure.
I appreciate you for going that far.
Thank you, no problem.
But I'm like, Fortnite being perfect, I don't know. Like,
what for you? What to you makes it imperfect?
Well, I think we get into a bigger discussion about what would make a game perfect. And I do have one. You know, it's the invention of what it is. And it's simpler, so it's easier to say that it's perfect.
Okay, but no, for Fortnite, what do you think makes it imperfect? Because what I'm saying very specifically is Fortnite is perfect at being Fortnite. I'm not saying it's the best third-person shooter, right? I'm not going on that one. I'm saying it's perfect. Well, what Fortnite is trying to accomplish, it is perfect at.
Ah, so it's got an asterisk. Yeah, yes, okay. As a battle royale that's free for everybody across all platforms, and you know, you tack all that on, I'm a little more open to that for sure. It definitely is incredible. The live events, which you didn't even mention,
yeah.
that you know, I always have brought up, I think on Gamescast all last year, I'm like, that is just like, nobody's still able to do what they're doing there. It is insane. You know, when they have one of those big events where, right, the last big one for Chapter 2, you know, where you like hopped in and the world freaking
got
imploded.
Sucked into it, yeah.
In the one before that, or a few before that maybe, where you like all hopped in, you live voted as millions of players, like on a weapon that was going to be in the game. It's the type of stuff that you like say, that would be cool if, and they've, despite it even breaking for a moment, like incredible. So I see where you're coming from, especially within that that capsule there. But
Fran, what's a game that's 10 out of 10 to you?
Let's just get the simple one out of the way that I mentioned that I do think is perfect, and it's just unbelievable. It's Tetris. Like, Tetris is a perfect video game. I like, it was on watches, and it now is on everything, and now they're iterating into new things, of course, like
EGM's
Tetris 99.
Number one best game of all time on the top 100 list.
And it'll be on other people's lists, I'm sure, the puzzle games, you know, that are, like, inspired by this. And
of course.
So, just, I think it's an easy one that it's absolutely a 10, and I couldn't pick the version, but just Tetris period.
Yeah, you know,
is incredible. And it's not a 10, but I always want to give a shout out to Pokemon Puzzle League, which is built on Tetris Attack.
Yeah, let's go.
I always want to just shout that out. Love it.
It's not a 10?
Pokemon Puzzle League, I wouldn't give a 10, no. But I actually did review it, by the way, and gave it, I think, a nine. But back then, especially, like, this was in the midst of, like, Majora's Mask and, you know, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater and all these games that people are loving. And I'm a new reviewer on the scene at IGN, and I was like, Pokemon Puzzle League is a 9. And I got a lot of, like, what? What's this, like, crap about this puzzle game a Pokemon? Oh, man, it's so good.
Bless.
So in the spirit of going new and unexpected, and that's piggybacking off of Greg with Fortnite, not off of Fran with
I've never heard of Pokemon Puzzle League.
I'm going to say Astrobot Rescue Mission is a 10 out of 10. It is in the top tier of platformers I've ever played, right? I feel like I can only compare it to other platformers that are 10s, right, when I think about it, right? Like in PS I Love You XOXO, when I was talking about it, right, I invoked Mario Galaxy, right, which I also put up there as, like, in the top tier. But Astrobot Rescue Mission, I feel like, if we're talking about polish and excellence in design, like, every single level in that game felt new and felt fresh. It was introducing a new idea in a way where I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, this is fun. Like, this is a great idea, and this is clever, right? Not to mention that, like, in terms of, this is the thing I forgot to mention on PS Love XOXO, that, like, in terms of the ways in which they kind of go beyond our expectations with 3D platformers. Like, 3D platformers tend to do a lot of the same things in terms of, hey, we're going to put you in the themed level. You're going to either collect a thing or you're going to get to the end of the level. Even with just the idea of theming, there's a level in Astrobot Rescue Mission where it is like I think it's like a neon theme park, which is a thing that I didn't really think about before until I started playing this game. And I was like, wow, what a clever theme that really enhances every single portion of what's going on right now, right? It's like all the lights that are going in virtual reality makes everything feel livelier, along with the theme park theme that then allows for cool puzzles and cool design decisions on top of that, right? Like, polish wise and puzzle design wise and game design wise and level design wise, that game kind of that game hits all those things immaculately. Like, it exceeds in all those things immaculately. But then also, I think what it does for virtual reality and actually creating an experience that feels unique and that justifies the idea of being in virtual reality, I think it does that super well, right? Like, Astrobot Rescue Mission is a game that can only exist in virtual reality in the ways that it makes you look around and it makes you really be involved with the experience and kind of, you know, have to be in the level with Astrobot in order to solve his puzzles and in order to actually play this game, right? Like, I would not want to play Astrobot Rescue Mission or any sort of Astrobot game that doesn't take place in virtual reality. Like, that's how good that game is at really justifying that experience.
Wait, are you game, I've never yet I've never seen or played shot. I was just looking at the footage. Yeah. Are you telling me that you are a character as well as
yes your, so really it's cool. It's a 3D platformer. You're controlling Astrobot, who's like a small robot, and you're going through level by level this Crash Bandicoot style in the way that these levels are linear, and you are playing as like a big robot that I forget if the robot actually controls Astrobot. I guess he doesn't, but you're controlling Astrobot.
Yeah, lives in the controller, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and so like you're basically just following Astrobot and assisting him on his adventure to like find all his friends who are like scattered in the levels and then get to the end of each level.
His spaceship gets fucked up at the beginning, yeah, and all the other Astrobots get spread out, so they're stranded, and you have to help Astrobot go get them and get pieces.
Yeah,
of the
it's
ship.
A PSVR exclusive.
So for clarity, are you saying it's a 10 next to, like, you know, Mario 64 and platformers, period, or because of what it does in VR?
Because
if you were
both.
To tear out the VR element,
right, like,
somehow,
I think it's a 10 for, like, platformer. It's an incredible platformer, but it's an incredible platformer because it's in VR also. It's not a...
But if you were to remove the VR, and I know that may be even possible.
It's not... let me phrase it like this.
Would it just be a good platformer outright with the puzzle design, you know, the amount of content, et cetera?
It's not an incredible platformer because it's in VR. Like, not just for VR. It's an incredible platformer, period. Like, I'll put it in that top tier, period.
I love platformers.
And
play this then.
I think it justifies VR.
Right? Do you have VR? PSVR?
Yeah. No, my brother's got it, so I'll borrow it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I would put it up there, period, like, with the greatest platformers. And, like, yeah, I'll just say it's a 10 out of 10 game. Amazing. Like, in terms of polish, design, all that stuff.
What I always talk to you, and I know it sounds goofy, but, like... Astrobot, every one of those levels, and I would say worlds, but then even boil it down to levels, right? It sounds like I'm making a joke, right? But they're artisanal. Like, it's everything is done with purpose. Like, I feel like when you play any platformer, you have a variety of different moves, mechanics, things, right? And so you have that, like, how am I going to do this? You try a bunch of things, you don't understand. Astrobot, early on in everyone levels, gives you a tool for that level. And so you know you're using it there. So suddenly it becomes more about, like, okay, well, I'm grappling hook or I'm using the water gun or whatever. And it is this, I don't know what to do exactly here, but I have all the stuff I have to do. So it is looking around. It is figuring it out, right? Like, you're being, you talk about Crash Bandicoot, like, right? Mm-hmm. As you move Astrobot, you are moving forward through the level, leaving stuff behind you, obviously, and you can't go back for it. So it is that thing of going through and seeing, oh, man, there was one of the bots I should have saved. Okay, cool. I heard him. I couldn't see him. That's where it is. And even coming back to be like, wait, how do I get up there? What do I do? How do I move Astrobot?
Yeah, and that's, like, that's part of the thing where I say how well it justifies VR is when, like, the fact that they're missable, right? Whenever you hear one of his Astrobot friends, like, being like, help me up, like, in whatever corner, right? You immediately, as a player, you stop, and then you're like, okay, where is this guy? And you physically have to, like, look up and down and, like, around certain things to really kind of figure out how to solve the situation you're in, right? And that in that way, it really, like, it doesn't feel like a gimmick. Like, it feels like a true next step. You know, or it makes VR feel like a true next step in what it is, right? And it's one of the only VR games that I've played that really I feel like has done that, right? It's like that and Beat Saber, like the two games in VR where I'm like, wow, this can really be like a definitive way to play video games.
Tim.
So for mine, I want to start with the Mario game. Now here's the thing. Mario is probably the franchise that I know most intimately and critically, where I can, like, look at all of them and really compare them one for one or whatever. And looking at the list of all of them that have come out, I was trying to decide which ones to me are a 10. Mario 3, Mario World, Mario Galaxy 2. Those are all 10s.
Okay.
You don't think 64?
64 is on my favorite list, absolutely. But I do not think it's a 10.
I can't agree with you.
Because I just think that there's not enough variation in boss fights, and there are not enough boss fights. And there's not every level is as memorable as the most iconic ones, right? I feel like some of the later levels, like, you really start to just be like, all right, these are fine, but they're not 10 out of 10 when so much of the other ones are.
You didn't love Rainbow Ride?
No, I did not. I love the idea of it, but I did not love it. But then even Odyssey, I feel like I couldn't give a 10. It's close, but I just feel like that game hints too much at the promise of things that we don't fully get, like the dragon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So freaking cool, and it's over before it even starts, right? There's some very few elements that if they just expanded a little bit more, that would have been
a 10. That game should have breathed more in those moments. Because, like, I remember certain moments in Mario Odyssey, like the New Donk City moment toward the end of that level, and, like, even the beginning of New Donk City, and, yeah, the dragon, and, you know, the beginning parts of the Moon Kingdom,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that game is full of moments that are there and then they're gone.
Yes.
And it sucks that they didn't really last longer or, like, breathe more.
Yeah. But I decided there's one other Mario game that I give a 10 out of 10 that most people do not give enough love.
Mario Tennis.
It's Yoshi's Island.
Yeah.
Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island is a 10. Yeah. It's not just a good game. It's not just a great game. It's a 10. And I say that because it feels as good as any other Mario game, but it feels completely different than any other Mario game. We know what Mario feels like. We know how he runs, how he jumps, the momentum of it all. Yoshi threw that all out the window. It's a different type of game, but Yoshi still feels that good. Mm-hmm. It's just a totally different style.
Yeah.
It's a lot slower.
It's a good pick.
A lot more adventure-based, a lot more puzzle-focused of, like, kind of like making it through the levels. But it's more than just being a good platformer. It has such an amazing graphical style that doesn't just look nice, it backs itself up with its gameplay and it backs itself up with its story. It has enough of a story, it never gets in your way, but you care and you're invested more than just, oh, Princess Peach is taken. You having baby Mario the entire time and you having to take him through the level when you get hit and he flies away, it's like you feel a connection to the characters in a way that I haven't ever felt in a platformer until Celeste. Where I'm like, oh my God, I actually give a shit about you. You're not just this little thing I'm jumping around with, right? And the game paces itself so well in terms of introducing you to new ideas and new concepts of what you traditionally know about 2D platformers and level design. But this one kind of, like, throws everything with a twist. And the boss fights are all fantastic. And they pace them in the order that these boss fights are presented to you you feel like you're getting better. You feel like you're constantly like growing, and the epicness of this adventure really feels like an adventure. You feel when you end a level and Yoshi like throws baby Mario to the next Yoshi, like you really feel like you're like kind of like you're helping something out, man. Like this little motherfucker that won't shut the fuck up needs to get back to his parents, needs Luigi, right? But as it grows, the music changes as you go through the boss fights. About halfway through the game, like you face a really epic Piranha Plant boss fight, and the music, it's the same boss theme but like just upped one notch. Then you start getting more and more creative with the boss fights where you're on the moon running around, and like it's the inspiration for Mario Galaxy where like you're actually running around the entire circle and the screen's just spinning. But the one moment for me that like just takes it to the next level is the final boss fight. Barrett, I sent you a video to ask this that I want to look at real quick. It's the perfect.
You didn't tell me we could bring visual aids.
I just decided right now. It's the perfect culmination of like why this game is special, because it presents you with a normal ass boss fight that we'll look at in a second, where you're just in this room with Baby Bowser and you're kind of just going back, and it totally feels like that could be the final fight. But then they up the ante, and it's purely epic. And they somehow made a game about Yoshi with Baby Mario epic. Mm. Go about one minute into this. So this is a normal ass boss fight. Sure. It's cool. It's great. Go a bit more. More. Yeah. Stop there. This whole bit with the music, with the way the camera shifts for the first time in the game, the camera goes behind Yoshi a little bit, and you're throwing in the Y axis instead of the X axis.
Yoshi doesn't know what to do, see? Scratches his little chin.
Like, you fucking kidding me right now? Look at this guy. Yeah. And then the most badass guitar riff ever heard on Super Nintendo. Let's fucking go. That's it. That's all I'll show.
Let me see. I want to see more.
Pretty cool.
Well, you said he runs on a different axis. Oh,
yeah,
I see.
So now he's looking that way. And then, hold on.
Barrett, show.
Oh,
he's got to, like, shoot.
So you get these eggs, and then you just launch the eggs.
In his mouth.
And
gotcha.
You need to get it into his mouth. But it's just like, we always talk about how we hate when video games play one way and then, like, throw some other bullshit at the end.
Yeah.
This is a perfect example of how to do it right.
Yeah.
Where it's like, this feels so cool and so earned that when you finally beat him and then get Baby Mario saved, you're just like, I fucking did something with my life. Mm. 10 out of 10, Yoshi's Island.
Yoshi's Island is incredible.
So what was the story? This is a prequel, or were they time traveling? Yeah.
Prequel.
Okay.
Would you say it's the best Mario game?
No.
Are the games that you would put above it also 10 out of 10s?
You mean the other Marios?
The other Marios that you would say...
Yes. Mario 3 and Mario World are better than this.
Okay. And you would say both of
them. But this is the one you're putting on the list.
This is the one that I'm putting on my list, yeah.
Sure.
Cool.
Can't argue with any of that, man.
You can't, I know. But I would put Super Mario World on there.
That I would also put Mario 64 on there.
Yeah. Well, it's on my list. Well, you can say everyone gets your time, all right? Super Mario World?
Yeah.
Come here.
Give there me it is.
There it is, right there, everybody. That's how you do it. That's how you make, friendships.
Agents forever.
Yeah, exactly. Super Mario World was my Mario game, because obviously you got to put at least one on here. I mean, you could have a list of Marios that are 10
Would you
out
put
of
10. Multiple?
No, this is the one Mario that always spoke to me the most. And that's not to say I love Mario 64. I loved Galaxy. That was my... I was pulling for that for Game of the Year over Zelda, if you remember. Mario 64 is the one that... touched me. That's the one that made me a Mario fan. And that's, obviously I was a Sega kid. So, I'd go to somebody's house with an NES and I'd play Super Mario Brothers, but it was always like a little bit here, a little bit there. They're warp piping. I don't understand what the fuck's happening. It was Mario World where, I sat in Matt Noel's basement one summer, and this is long after it had been out a long time, and sat there just, we had nothing to do. So I sat there and just played it from the start, and to the point that even after I had beaten it multiple times that summer, went home, traded a bunch of shit in and bought my own SNES and that's all I ever had on it. I had an SNES and all I ever had was Super Mario World. And I came home and played that, And I would just listen to Pinkerton over and over again and I would play that game. And like, that is like such, it's Mario World. Everybody knows, right? Like why that overworld, that the music, getting a cape, flying, like
it's the scope. The Mario World, the thing that makes it special, especially compared to 3 and coming right after 3, which was so fantastic, is that it's so much bigger. There's so many more secrets. There's so much more like different exits to levels. The levels themselves have a verticality that you just don't see in the previous Mario games.
Like, it was so refined, diverse. It's like Mario 3 is incredible, but like this was pretty much like that ultimate 2D refinement on what they'd been doing for many years, right? And they finally got to the point where like, it just all came together.
What Mario games would you say are a 10?
This one was on my list. I actually do have Mario 64 on my list. And I understand the perspective about things holding up. That's where, again, I think you get into with my list. I was like, it was more about for it being revolutionary and influential, as well as it is still an awesome game. And it is so memorable.
Would you give 3 a 10?
I didn't put it on my list. I would, but I didn't put it on my list, right, if that makes sense to kind of where we're going. Yeah, like you were getting into it. It's like, God, how many Mario games should I put on this list?
I mean, your list can be like, as many as you want.
The answer is 3. There's a lot of them.
The right answer is 3.
Their pedigree on that series, I mean, it is their flagship series, but it is an industry flagship, you know, like it's hard. Yeah, that's why when you were talking about Astrobot, I was like, wow, it holds up to all these Mario games, you know, essentially. I'm like, wow, like that is a
yeah,
that is a lot to like live up to. And so that is my stand for that. So I frankly, when you said Mario Galaxy 2, I was like, actually, you know what? I never actually finished Galaxy 2. I realized, and Galaxy was also on one of my, like, I have a split list of like, maybe should I move it up? And like Galaxy's on there, of course. It's incredible. The secret level stuff, oh my God, so cool. But anyway, Mario 64 is on the list because of it, all the things we said before. It's so influential and revolutionary, and I understand why it doesn't hold up, but it's still a 10.
Is Mario 1 on nobody's list?
No. Mario 1's not a 10.
You don't think so?
No. It's revolutionary. It's historic. It's amazing.
Because like I put it, like, so Mario 64 and Mario 1, I put in the same category as like Fortnite almost, where it is, I feel like right now, right, a large part of Fortnite is the impact of it and the story of it and how well resonating it is and how much like looking forward 20 years from now, we're going to look back and we're going to be like, oh yeah, Fortnite, either it's still going to be a thing or we're going to be like, yo, you remember how big of a thing Fortnite was? And I feel like Mario 1 and Mario 64 were both kind of that also. I can't really
do you think myself. We just take them for granted in that way?
Yeah, like yeah. I can't put myself in the shoes of when Mario 1 originally came out, because I played it later and I was too young. I don't even think I was born yet when Mario 1 came out. But like for Mario 64, for sure, like I think, you know, we're talking about right now the influence of Fortnite, right? It's the Battle Pass. It's the, I mean, it's Battle Royale, period. I know it didn't create Battle Royale, but it is making it's made Battle Royale bigger than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. And it's having so much impact. We're seeing other games borrow and take from Fortnite in huge ways, right? Multiplayer in general is taken from Fortnite. Mario 64 did that.
Yeah, but see, I think it's harder because maybe it's in the back of our minds here, but it's like Super Mario 3 and Super Mario were on the NES and like, yes, the NES as well. And like Mario 3 is like so much better than Mario. Yeah. And so like there's no like hesitation of, I get where you're coming from, the influential, but because being on the same platform, but like if I say on the N64, you know, what would you pick that, you know, bested Mario 64? It's like you might start talking about Banjo-Kazooie and stuff or whatever if that you're a fan. But there's no other Mario game that you were like, oh, right. So I think that's exactly why, like, Mario 3 maybe, but not Mario 1.
Odyssey would be, or even with Galaxy, right? Like, you do start to think of it that way. And like,
same thing. They're like eras, whereas Mario 3 was that era. Yeah. Like, yeah, I actually would put it on the list. But then Mario World is just so incredible. I don't know. It was on that bleeding edge.
But then,
like
I think that then kind of feeds into the conversation of, if they made Fortnite 2, which is this Fortnite, and it takes all the features of Fortnite and makes them slightly better.
Yeah.
Does that
but
then
that's
change
not what
how
Mario
we...
3 and 1 are. Mario 3 is so much better than Mario 1.
Well, I agree with that.
And does so much different and like takes it doesn't just make it better. It like,
oh, yeah. It's a different game.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it's always like Fortnite with what you're describing. It's like that would just
well,
be
I'm more so meaning
version.
Like Mario 64 to like Mario Odyssey. Mm-hmm. Right. That's more so like the comparison I'm making is that like those games are so similar, but Mario Odyssey is definitely like a 2008 or 2017 version of Mario 64.
See, I don't know about that.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it learned a lot, and like there's a lot of seeds that turned into the tree that is Mario Odyssey. Mm-hmm. But they're very, very different games in the sense of like the just the level hubs, right? Like just the way that they function, the way they work, and like the moons being as plentiful as they are.
But I think these are all results of how far we've come in video games, period, right? Like if Mario Odyssey came out in 1996, it would just be Mario 64 in a way where if Fortnite 2 comes out, say, in a few years from now and slightly improves because technology's gotten better or they have learned from the lessons of Fortnite 1, then in 30 years, we look back and we're like, oh, man, Fortnite versus Fortnite 2, which one is better? Well, obviously Fortnite 2 is the better game, but is Fortnite the 10 out of 10 in the situation looking back, because Fortnite was the one that originally established? And I know I'm going down a rabbit hole.
No, I see what you're getting at. I do think the difference that maybe Tim was getting at was like Super Mario. I mean, it is. It's incredible, incredibly influential as well, but it wasn't really feature complete, kind of, in a way. Like, it was great.
There's a lot of bullshit in
the
first game.
It ended pretty quickly.
The
castle
puzzles of having to understand like what level to go on of up, down, middle, those are bad.
Mm. It was all right, but I mean, Mario 3, the jump there was just incredible. But with Fortnite, it is feature complete in so many ways and so evolved. So, I mean, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Nobody would fault you if you said Mario's, you know, on your list.
I mean, Mario's not even on my list.
I would ask you why, you know. Well, if you put Mario on there, well, you got to put on Mario 3. So, my opinion, you can't like say, well, it's Super Mario, and then it's not 3. So, meaning, if you want to put
my
both
Mario,
on,
Mario 3 is on my list, Mario 64 is on my list, and the Mario Odyssey actually is on my list.
So, you didn't put Super Mario on your list?
No, I didn't put Super Mario on my list.
I'm just out here defending it, though.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
That's how podcasts
work. I was more so curious
you
the
talk
reason.
About things.
Yeah. Let's give me a game on your list.
Let me see here. Let me see here. I am going to put out Shadow of the Colossus. Hmm. I think Shadow of the Colossus. And
even
talking
with those climbing controls.
Would you say a remake or original?
Say both. I might say original. Because like...
Really?
Yeah. Like I think... I'll say original. Because I think for me, Shadow of the Colossus, one, I first played on the original and it hit me on that original... In that original game, when I played the remake, it actually kind of made me appreciate the game slightly less. Hmm. You know, one because like I'm not necessarily in the team of the controls are terrible in Shadow of Colossus. I think like the controls are
particular for that
and
game,
like
right?
they're purposeful, right? Yeah. Like you're meant to struggle with the controls a bit because the whole game is about struggling to
it's
hold on.
It's just like
to
in Lair, how the dragon wasn't supposed to be responsive because he's a dragon.
Yeah,
right?
And I
controls in Shadow of Colossus PS4 are not bad at all.
I think
like Last Guardian's
they're
bad.
Still struggle.
Shadow of Colossus isn't.
And I'm also team like Last Guardian controls not that bad, right? Like I think those games serve the purpose that they're trying to like. They achieve the thing that they're trying to achieve, which is, hey, let's make the player struggle a little bit to like, kind of do what they're kind of doing, because the whole thing is like struggling to hold on. It's that whole like fight and struggle to like stay on this Colossus. But for me, Shadow Colossus is a 10 because I think for me that was probably the first game I played where I was like, oh shoot, like video games are art. Like this is like a work of art right here, right? From the visual design being so unique and beautiful to how well they establish scale and like the size of the Colossi. And even the PS4 version does this too, which is the thing that surprised me, is that like I thought, like part of me thought that the game being on PS2 is the thing that made this impressive. But yeah, even the PS4 version, I was like, shoot, these things are big and these things like are awesome, right? Like they look cool. It feels crazy fighting this huge thing. So they nail that. But then also you have like the feeling of accomplishment that you get when you take one down and you feel like you just conquered like this huge mountain. I think gameplay wise, it's simple, clean, achieves what it's doing, but also drives home the message message of the game of I guess climbing that hill and completing this like this task that seems bigger than you. But then also like you look at soundtrack, you look at visuals, you look at all the different presentation elements, and it knocks those things out of the park. Yeah. And so
my next one, I'm gonna go Metal Gear Solid.
One?
Four.
Four.
Metal Gear Solid 4 is a 10 out of 10. It does everything that it was trying to do perfectly to me. And that means story, that means gameplay, that means emotional connection to me as somebody that played through the franchise. They pay so much love and attention to making sure that it is more than just a video game. It is an experience, and it is a love letter to the experience that I've had with the previous games, in addition to making the game feel more modern, making it actually feel like a playable third-person shooter in a way that MGS 1, 2, and 3 just don't hold up to modern sensibilities of gameplay, whereas you play 4, it's a shooter, you know? And I feel like the set pieces in that game, it really, to me, was the first game that felt truly next-gen, and which was, you know, last-gen at this point. But I feel like to this day, it still has that sense of impressive like technical achievements of making boss fights seem more epic than they necessarily are. Like the use of gameplay mixed with Kojima storytelling of you're in a boss fight and there's a cutscene happening at the same time. The emotion of the microwave scene and all of that stuff. But and in addition to going back to Shadow Moses and,
come
and
on,
all that, it's just like it is such a great culmination of amazing moments that that don't feel like a greatest hits album. They feel like their own thing, and it's backed up by great gameplay. Greg Miller.
Yeah.
What Metal Gear Solid would you say?
I would have said Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker, of course. I think Metal Gear Solid.
Is that the only one that you would say is a 10?
That's the only one I put on my list, yeah. You know, I think, you know, Metal Gear Solid 5 has the best gameplay of the series, but the weakest story.
Yeah.
4, there's a lot going on in there, and it's the same argument I always had with the top 25s at IGN, right? Of like when it would be like, oh, the top 10 PS3 games, right? And we wouldn't put Metal Gear Solid 4 on it. And I was always like, for me, the way I interpret this is like, these are the games I would recommend out the gate. I know we've talked about this before, yeah. Where I was like, I wouldn't recommend that because I think you need more. You need to have played other Metal Gears. It wouldn't be on my blanket list.
But you have those things.
Yeah.
So to you, would you not say it's a 10?
Well, I went to IGN while you were talking to look at the review with Jeff Haynes. Who I was like, I think Jeff gave this a 10. And he did, yeah. And it was also, I remember being second opinion on it and being like, what? Everything Jeff said. And it's, luckily, with IGN's new review format, they threw that away. They don't have that anymore. But I mean, it's so hard now because we're not in the moment. I remember being like, yes, this is a 10 out of 10. I mean, in the moment of like what we're talking about, I remember being like, holy shit, they did this. This is what you're saying, right? They stuck the landing. It was, how the fuck are you going to do one game that ties up this entire series, right? And they did. There's a lot in there. Yeah. It's a big old juicy burger with toppings falling off the side, but you're there. You get it done, right? I think so. It's a weird question where I think Greg Miller in the shit playing the game alongside Jeff and reviewing it with Jeff was like, yeah, I totally sign off on this in a 10. And I think I said it. I think it was a 10, even though I don't recall it 100%. But now I wouldn't think of that as a 10 in terms of Metal Gear. But again, I think it's just because I'm thinking of hindsight 2020, what this series is, what it became, what stands out to me about those games, right? Or about that game in particular. And I think for me, you know, Peace Walker is just the one that did what I wanted out of Metal Gears that I think Metal Gear had lost over time, which was here's a straight and narrow story of what's going on. I always talk about that, right? Of like, if you've never played a Metal Gear, you can pick that up. You can go in. You understand that you are this guy. You're the big boss. Right? You're big boss. You have this team of mercenaries that you work with or whatever. These people show up. You don't want to help them, but they have a tape recorder that has the voice of your mentor boss on it, and you know that you killed that person. Of course you're going to go on this mission, right? And then to watch it all unravel from there and, you know, the layers of the onion. And it gets obviously into the super, super Metal Gear-y territory and melodrama and everything else. But I love that story. I, you know, just replaying it this year on PS I Love You XOXO, going back and getting to watch those cutscenes. Like, I think even with Metal Gear Solid 5, playing that game, the gameplay being so amazing and being like, oh yeah, Kiefer Sutherland, what a weird choice. You know what I mean? I miss David Hayter, but like, okay, this is what, going back and playing Peace Walker, it's like, fuck is it a blow to this franchise that Hayter didn't get to do Metal Gear Solid 5, right? He is so good and he is so Snake and he is so boss. And like watching those cutscenes, interacting with those cutscenes, again, it's a 10 out of 10 to me. And I think to this point, it's a 10 out of 10 of what I would want from a Metal Gear on PSP. And like, that is such a huge part of it. Of, I remember playing that game at the review event for 2 straight days and then playing it nonstop on Muni and playing it at bars with Mike Pereira and Caleb Lawson and playing it when I was on a BART going somewhere. I mean, like, if you wanted to have the headphones on, let's get lost in the story, see these beautiful cutscenes, great. If you just wanted to recruit off the Wi-Fis you were going, it was there and you could do that. The, you know, mini games that people, even if they don't think they know Peace Walker, know from Metal Gear Solid 5 of, man, I need the mess hall team to be better on Mother Base. So I need to go out and recruit somebody who's an S rank at food. And like, you're trying to look through your goggles to find that person to do that. The micromanagement of that versus the outer ops of being able to build your team and send them out with the Metal Gear you're building, which I remember flipping out about, that I was going to have my own Metal Gear and you design it with AI and do all these different things for it, versus just the, you know, I want to go play and I want to go be the stealthiest big boss I can. Like, that was all awesome. Like, that is, I think, that is the Metal Gear that gets it, for me personally, the most right in terms of story, gameplay, replayability, being on a portable system. Like, it just, everything, it's similar to Fortnite, right? Everything it sets out to do, I think it accomplishes with an S rank.
Fran, before you give your next game, I want to tell you about our sponsors. Ladies and gentlemen, this episode of the Kinda Funny Games cast is brought to you by Spotify's The Besties. Here's the deal. It's one of Andy's favorite podcasts of all time. You're familiar with the cast. You know what's up already. Justin and Griffin McElroy are joined by Russ Frushtick and Chris Plant. They go deep on a single video game every single week. It's, you know, you like video games, you like podcasts. I know you do because you listen to our show. You're going to love this one. They're really smart, they're really funny, and they love video games. You can get the show exclusively on Spotify. It's free over there. Why would you not listen to it? Spotify has all your favorite podcasts, including ours as well. But check out The Besties. Like I said, it's one of Andy Cortez's favorite podcasts of all time. He's been listening to them for years. They do end-of-the-year wrap-ups where they like look back and like talk about Game of the Year stuff, but they do it really, really, really well. You should listen to The Besties free only on Spotify. You can find them on Spotify, which also has all your favorite podcasts. Like I've been saying, Spotify, the best place to listen to podcasts, man. It's been fantastic. It's where Andy listens to his podcast. And he's a little cute little podcast boy. You know what I mean? I can always find him listening to The Besties on Spotify. You should do it too. Be cool like Andy. What's next, Fran?
Yeah, I was struggling going between the past, the future. No, we're not going to the future with that.
Hey, my other 10 out of 10, God of War 2, 2021.
Perfect segue, Greg, because I want to put God of War out there. We all have it on our list, I'm sure. Does anyone not have it on their list? God of War on PlayStation 2018? 4.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's on my list.
That's on my list.
Anyone not have it? Of
course. My favorite game of all time.
That I would be upset and shocked by, so I'm glad that I read the room right.
Is it perfect?
God of War 2018 is a perfect video game.
Yeah!
Boom.
Woo! Look at him, man. He's so liberal with his use of perfect.
Hey, why do we have the fucking word if we never use it, right?
You can use it, like perfect hair or... Perfect drink, perfect shirt, whatever. Anyway, God of War, God, it just blew my mind, and it still does. And it's what you were getting at before. There's all this criteria. Is it art? Yes. Is it an amazing story? Yes. Is the gameplay incredible? Yes. Are the mechanics tight and flawless? Yes. Does it have depth to it? Yes.
Does it do something new? The camera.
Does it do something? Yeah, it's camera. A single camera. Even if it didn't have that. But all those things. It has everything. And it has the depth in particular. It already was an incredible game. You know, I look back on games like Uncharted 2, right, which I think set the stage in a way for the cinematic nature of something like what God of War became, right, and decided to become. And it
Uncharted
really
is, 2. 10.
Oh, yeah, a lot of what PlayStation stood for. Yeah, it is on my list. But God of War is so much more than that, but it learned how to be up close and do those things. But meaning if you look back, and I don't... Would you use the word perfect for Uncharted 2?
No,
you wouldn't, because you'd go to jump and you'd be like, crap, I guess I'm not supposed to jump that way, but it looks amazing. I'm supposed to jump this way.
My favorite Uncharted animation of all time is what...
Yeah,
oh my God.
Oh, everybody. No, 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 no.
Fuck, where do you want me to claw? No, God damn it, Druckmann.
So anyway, I mean, it still just blows my mind with how tight it is, but the depth in particular, I did not expect on top of, you know, I originally brought up Uncharted 2 because, like, it is an amazing story and the exploration. Shooting's not bad, you know, but really it's the exploration and puzzle design and story where... the depth, I would say. I mean, he didn't have some skill tree that you dove into, and God of War just has it all. But when I got into God of War, and I questioned every step where I'm like, no, this is probably all you're going to get. And you're like, what? You get this and this and this? It's crazy to me still how good that game is.
Yeah. And it's another game that, yeah, like, when I was done with the story, I just couldn't stop playing. I had to see
it's
it all
the stuff you we want to get.
The right? amount of times I'd be in that boat and listen to the stories rather than get off it, right?
Like, so cool.
To your point, even, I remember when they cut us off for the preview event, right? Which is when you walk over with the wounded boar or whatever. They were like, hard cut. They all walked around and stopped us. And it was like such a weird spot to stop in. I'm like, all right, cool. And then when you get that, right after that, right, is when it goes open world. And you're like, holy shit, fuck. Like, this game is that?
Yeah, that oh my God. Exactly.
What a fucking video game, man.
It opened as well with, like, what I always want to see in games like this, which is just, like, amazing, badass, like, boss fight. And, like, let's just get into it. I love games that sort of teach you, and it takes 15 hours to, you know, learn. But at the same time, like, I'll just get into it. And this game did it in a way that it was both intuitive and incredible. But to Greg's point, it was like, I thought that was the game for a while, right? And we saw some demos at E3, and then all of a sudden, it's like, wait, it's got this huge open world, too? Like
going out, crafting armor, doing these different things, augmenting the stats, the, you know, the From little
the soundtrack
go
as
find
well.
Ravens to go fight Valkyries to go, you know what I mean? Everything's got lore attached to it that I wanted to read and I wanted to understand.
It has that similar sense of scale that I was kind of talking about with Shadow Colossus that like you might get from an Uncharted game also, where you approach like a giant structure and you look up and you're like, dang, this thing is huge, right? And then you know, by the end of that level, you're like on top of it, right? It has those moments too that I think is awesome. And I think it has what I feel like a lot of 10 out of 10 games have that we don't necessarily touch on because it's hard to really put your finger on it, but it has heart, right? Like when I think of 10 out of 10 games for me, I think of, you know, games like Last of Us or games like, I keep bringing up Undertale, but Undertale like really is a 10 out of 10 game for me. And that's because like that game has heart more so than a lot of other games. God of War, I feel like, has heart, right? In the way that it tells its story, and the way that its story is personal, but then also like we talk about the close-up camera with what that adds, right? They weren't afraid to really, you know, get in there
nice and tight.
Yeah, get in there and really, like, you know, get real and get personal and have like a subtle touch in terms of how we're going to present what's going on in the situation, given what God of War is. Like, it, you know, historically being a big action, I'm gonna bang these, I don't know if they're humans, actually, now I think about it. No, they're humans in God of War 1.
Oh, I know.
God of War?
You're
the original
God of War? He's talking about the sex scene.
Like, the sex.
Sex to people.
Are they goddesses or
whatever? For some reason, in my head,
they were people.
They were serpents at first, and I was like, no way.
Actually, that ain't right. That ain't canon.
I'm going to kill, I'm going to bang, I'm going to do all that stuff. That's what God of War kind of comes from. And then, like, it had that pivot, and that pivot, you know, had a lot of heart to it, and I appreciate that.
And they just pull everything off in that game, right? Yep. And minor spoilers, I guess, for God of War. Can we spoil? Actually, a major spoiler if I spoil it, I guess.
Yeah, don't
spoil it.
The spoiler's 10 out of 10.
Like the moment where he's like, I know of such a thing, and he goes off. Like, I remember being so outrageously hyped for that moment, and I did not like God of War or Kratos leading into this game.
That's it.
They did such a storytelling job that I was like, I am so in with him being a father and so in on his journey with Atreus that, like, this thing I know is about to be fucking insane.
Insane. Bless.
Metal Gear Solid 3 and 5. Those are both 10 out of 10s for me.
What's your argument for 5 being a 10 out of 10, even though the story is what it is?
Because it's an achievement in gameplay. Like, and I think that comes into like the perfection conversation of like, does a game need to be perfect to be a 10 out of 10? Is there such thing as a perfect game? I don't think there's such thing as a perfect game. and so I feel like all elements of a game don't have to be, you know, magnificent in order to achieve a 10 out of 10, as long as like it's doing something or it's doing a certain amount of things in a way that is exceptional, right? And I think the gameplay of Metal Gear Solid 5 is exceptional, right? It's the best stealth game I've ever played. Like, I can easily say that. The systems, the mechanics they give you, right? Like, I'm a big systems person. I love when games are like, okay, yeah, when the weather is rainy, that means that you have to approach a situation like this, right? When there's a dust storm, that means you have to approach a situation like this, right? And we talked about this on our segment on PS Love You, where we're talking about games of the year for different years, right? And I think both of ours for 2015, spoilers for PS Love You, was Metal Gear Solid 5, right? And like I mentioned, like, oh yeah, if you keep headshotting dudes, right, they'll start wearing helmets later on in missions, right? The game kind of sees what you're doing, and then it then counters what you're doing later on, and it reacts to you because it's trying to encourage you to get out of your comfort zone, because they have so many systems available for you that you don't have to keep doing the same thing over and over again. Like, the game really wants you to think and really wants you to execute and really wants you to play along in this world and really get a feel for what's going on. And I think the ways in which it does that is better than, I'm going to say better than like 99% of games that have tried doing that. Now that I played Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, which does a similar thing in terms of physics and how to approach situations and give you options to do things, I think both those games kind of do them pretty equally well. But those are the top tier games in terms of that, in terms of immersing you into this world and letting you play around and really choose how you play. And so Metal Gear Solid 5 for me is a 10 out of 10 because of how well it does that. And I think the story, the story of course is like missing chapter 3, but I don't think the story is like terrible. Like, I like a lot of the moments in the stories, like we kind of talk about in Mother Base, and like how there are certain elements of the story that kind of feed back into how you have to solve an issue, and you're like, oh, okay, cool. Like, the themes of this game are language, because the character, like the villain has like this motivation. Okay, how does that feed back into how I solve this issue going on in Mother Base? Some of the quiet stuff was like, this is all stuff we talked about on PSLV, but some of the quiet stuff was kind of boggled, but still, like, I liked some moments with quiet. I liked some of the villain characters. I liked some of the chapter two stuff in terms of how that stuff kind of affects Mother Base. I don't want to spoil anything, but
yeah, that's the toughest thing about it, right? I feel like this story gets bagged on because we know there's supposed to be more, and it's left incomplete, right? And then it's on top of the fact that I don't, and maybe I'm speaking out of turn and just somebody who paid attention too close, but I don't think I am. Like, we just knew where this was going. There was enough, like, scuttlebutt in not even rumors. People talking about it, like, oh, I think this means that. And, like, da-da-da-da. And how could this happen? And so, like, from the jump of trailers, where, like, when you get to the reveal at the end, you're like, we knew this is going to happen. Like, Death Stranding, like, right? I think was such me sitting there playing it and literally in that final cutscene at, like, 3 a.m. or whatever, being like, I need to know what the fuck is going on. I don't know what is happening right now in this game, and watching it and being hanging on the words and waiting for the reveals. Whereas, like, Metal Gear was so great. Gameplay, 10 out of 10 for sure. Metal Gear Solid 5, right?
Sure. You know what I mean? 10 out of 10.
Yeah. And that's the thing of, like, playing Peace Walker Contemporary now, and, like, obviously now on a system and not on a PSP or whatever. Like, you see the inspirations of what 5 became, but then just see it fleshed out to feel so real. We always talk about that, right? Of, like, you know, just rolling on the ground or whatever, and Metal Gear Solid 5 is so good.
Yeah,
so
being able to, like, play music.
Rolling on the ground.
Right, you, like, have even the collectibles are awesome, right? You collect different songs.
Have when Pequod comes in, have him playing, like, something from the 80s or whatever.
Yeah, I think I had We're the Kids in America. Yeah, I had that playing every time. It was awesome.
So my next one, I'm going to go semi-Fran route with the Tetris thing, but it's weird. It's a weird one. Guitar Hero 3.
Oh, okay.
Now, I'm going to say specifically 3 because I just feel the track list is best representative of what that game accomplishes, which is making you feel like a fucking badass. I feel like there's a very nice kind of selection of songs that are good for people that have played the previous ones, good for people that haven't played before, but you get all the way up to the Through the Fire and Flames. And it is the perfect game where it's like, this is an arcade game done right, where you want to just one more song, just one more song, just one more song. 4 hours later, you're still trying to get a better score on the same song that you've been playing for hours on end, right? Yeah. And I think the Guitar Hero 3 came with the best controller, the best guitar controller that made you feel perfect. You really felt like you were in control. You really felt
that was the first wireless one, right?
That was the wireless one, and it was the one made by Neversoft.
And it was also the one that perfected the guitar battles.
And it had battles. The like single player elements were a bit more fleshed out as much as they needed to be. I feel like once Rock Band started happening, which was like right around this point, the skill of Guitar Hero went away and it became just more of a party game, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I think that for what Guitar Hero was trying to do, which is be a skill-based, fun arcade experience, but also make you feel like a badass, and it just does it perfectly.
Yeah, this is the one I never put a lot of time into, because to your point, I remember this was the wireless guitar and we liked it so much more than the Rock Band guitar that we all bought Rock Band and this and just used this guitar on Rock Band. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because this guitar was made after the learnings of the last couple, where it's like, this is made for people that are going to do Through the Fire and Flames. And if we're going to put songs like that in this game, it needs to be able to hold up.
And that's exactly what you hit the nail on the head with, right? Is like, this is the end of them being that arcade, we're going to push you thing. Because, like, even liking Guitar Hero 2 as much as I did, I was never good enough at Guitar Hero 2. And so when Rock Band dropped, Rock Band was such a party game for all of us at IGN, where it was, you know, we would stop working and just go in the demo room and play for hours.
Greg.
Yeah. Oh, my next pick?
Yeah.
What to choose from?
I'm going to put one out there.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot. We're just going to say it. WWF No Mercy, N64.
What a go, Pete.
All right. You know what I'm talking about? That is a 10 out of 10 wrestling game. Wrestling games do not get better than that.
I had a dream last night that I was playing a wrestling game. And like I was in the creation suite and whatever, and I was like I was back in the good old days of wrestling games when they were good.
Yeah, right. And that's the thing. Me too, dude. And. You know, you could obviously. I think it's similar to what we're talking about with Mario games and everything else. WWF No Mercy is the ultimate because it's the learnings of WrestleMania 2000, WCW versus NWO Revenge. You know, WCW before that. Like it is that AKI we're making these on N64 games that continue to up the ante. And the reason it's so great is because it is so simple yet complex. You know, it's what you're talking about of character creations. Once we get out of this, you start moving into, you know, the SmackDown, right? And what that becomes over on PlayStation. And the issue there is as we got more and more simmy with everything, we got more and more photorealistic, it became harder and harder and harder to make characters you believed in, you cared about, like you're making all your friends or whatever, and it's suddenly like, that's not my nose, that's not this thing. The no mercy stuff, right? Like, it's, I remember having such limited options, but they were limited, so when you tweaked them the right way and made it look enough like your friends, people would walk in and be like, oh my God, that's perfect.
Yeah.
That is, and I'm doing this, you know, very specifically off of when we were backyard wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, making everyone's costumes in it. And even though I had one of the No Mercy carts from the original run that actually ate your save progress and were a huge problem, the unlockables in there, the store, you know, the easy to pick up, difficult to master gameplay of strong grapple, weak grapple, strong strike, you know, things. Flick your stick for your special move, go in and do it. Like, it was that thing that anybody, even if you'd never watched wrestling, could pick up and understand. And nowadays, I feel like if Blessing and I sat down to play WWE 2K20, not only would it probably still be broken as fuck, we would sit there and be like, wait, how do you get out of the, what do you do? I don't, God, you know what I mean? Like, it is an abomination and an insult to humanity that they are not making games like this anymore. And not even if it's just the offshoot, give it to a small team, give them a roster of 12 wrestlers. Watch this sell way better than all the other wrestling games.
Yeah, man, it's, I didn't expect you to bring that up, but I, that was one of my most beloved games of that era. And I used to come home from like school, or actually, no, sorry, took breaks during lunch because my high school is right behind my house.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like my friends and I would come back, like make a sandwich while like playing this game, like totally. Just to get a few rounds in. But
totally.
Then we were just like drooling over getting a few matches in. But
oh, yeah.
To what you were getting at, yeah, that what I remember specifically, yeah, is it was the first wrestling game that felt real. And it did it through some simplicity, but like just when you threw someone toward the ropes and you had the option to do the next move, and it just all clicked. And no games really did it, but not in 3D environment either, you know. Like there was 2D wrestling games.
I mean, that's why why the AKI and N64 wrestling games broke out.
Yeah.
And it was that thing, it was, you know, perfect storm kind of shit, right? Because it was N64, the party machine, right? Yeah. Or the fun machine. And it was, hey, wrestling suddenly, like, for teenagers. It wasn't for kids anymore. It was this, like, they're showing breasts and they're cursing each other off. Like, so I remember in high school when I first got
the
to
attitude.
High school, people being so into revenge because it was like, hey, are you paying attention to this or that? I'm like, do you care about wrestling? And like, not really, but the games are fun. And like, yeah. I remember for when I was in the plays, I would bring the N64 there during like the all-day rehearsals and whatever, and we would go to the Spartan Theater or whatever, the place with a projector, and we would switch off between this and GoldenEye, and it was just playing it nonstop. And it was these people walking in who didn't know how to do it, and they'd want to play.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't know that I would give it a 10, but man, I see why you did.
Yeah, why wouldn't you think?
I think it was just how I did my list. Like, I wouldn't, if I looked back in wrestling games and in a lot of the ways we've talked about them, if I'm just looking at wrestling, then I'd be like, yeah, like I'd throw that on there.
Yeah.
Like I said in the beginning, I can't define.
I mean, outside of, like I said, the first run of cartridges being defective. Like, it's just perfect. Like, and it had ladder matches and had blood and had this and had the story and it had creation and it had unlockable outfits and it had all these, like, crazy-ass things. And I remember playing these games. And I will be honest that my memory with WrestleMania 2000 and this run together, because we're just on a year of the schedule, right?
Yeah,
so it's like, but I remember, like, so distinctively playing these things. I wish I had a clock on these things of how much I had played.
Yeah.
And I distinctly remember this match where I was playing as Triple H against Cactus Jack, and like I pedigreed him through the table and his head busted open just at the right time, and it was just like, this is so fucking perfect.
Frank.
It was incredible. In the interest of time, because there's like a lot of games. I know we still have time, but
I want to do, we'll do this, and then we'll do one more round.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's what I figured. Like, there's still a lot that I throw out there, but I got to get Metroid Prime out there. Like, it, you know, Super Metroid is on my list, of course. And I would want to talk about Super Metroid a lot. The thing I always bring up is similar to how games sort of do these amazing little things sometimes. In Super Metroid, there's that, like, bird that runs by you, you know, that runs by really fast and jumps up a giant, you know, hole, and you're like, wait, like, oh, I can do that? And you learn how to super jump from, like, this bird, and you could do it. Anyway, incredible moment. Super Metroid's amazing. But when Metroid Prime hit, there was so much skepticism and all the above, but man, just what an amazing, stellar experience. I feel like back then it was the moment that we had with God of War, almost, where it was like,
absolutely,
holy cow, it runs at 60 frames. Back then, you know, sports 480p, but it is pretty flawless with how it ran. I mean, it did have a few hitches here and there, but what an unbelievable game. Like, you were Samus the Bounty Hunter And it never felt more real. And the pacing of that game is something that I always bring up as well, is like just the way that it starts you and you, which Metroid, again, is kind of famous for, as well as Zelda does sometimes too. But it's like you start with a bunch of stuff and then all of a sudden you're stripped of it. But you exit that space station and, man, what a rush the beginning of the game is. And then you've got nothing and it's derelict and it's scary and you're just scanning for stuff and you slowly piece your suit back together and get these powers. And then, man, when you find out about the spider ball, holy crap. And all the puzzles that come with that. And it blew my mind back then.
Similar to God of War in the sense that it just nails every single element that it goes for. It has, you know, the story, it has the character, it has the music, the environment.
Yeah, the music was so cool.
The boss fights are phenomenal. Yeah. The puzzles are interesting and fun and clever.
Yeah.
And it does just have those things that you're like, oh, I've never seen this in video games before. Seeing the steam on the visor, seeing the reflection,
the little
on the visor.
Effects.
It's these little things that just make this 2002 game
still
stand up as special. You know, it's like, and I think that we're going to look back at God of War in a similar way in the future.
Yeah,
as we do to Metroid Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Bless.
All right, so I'm stuck between two. Do I go the more obvious one, or do I go the
Let's
one?
Let's get weird.
Let's get weird. Burnout 3 Takedown.
Oh,
I think that game's that's 10 awesome. Out of 10. Yeah, I think that game, when we talk about like excellence in gameplay, like that game has it. When we talk about like,
I had that.
Like, oh, did you have Burnout 3 Takedown?
I didn't write it down, but it was on my list of like, I was about to add it, and I was like, I'll remember.
It's just so good, and every single thing it tries to do, right? Like, whether you want to talk about the races, which feel like you're going faster than any other racing game you've ever played, right? You have that. You have the combat elements. You have the takedowns, right? You have Road Rage, which, you know, I think is such a fun, well-done feature in a racing game, right, where you can take out your other opponents by crashing into them and then knocking them into other cars or knocking them into a wall and making them crash.
Yeah.
Like, all the mechanics associated with crashing in that game, I think, are super well done.
Yeah, I'm, like, a massive fan of the Burnout series, and I just realized, like, almost in a way, that Mario 3 is to Burnout 3 Takedown as, you know, Burnout is to Mario. Like, the way that the game evolved,
interesting.
Never mind 2, of course, because Super Mario 2, but, like, 3 just, it did everything that it was setting out to do. It ran flawlessly. It had the speed, but what they did with the crash system and takedowns and how they perfected it, really, like,
and
it became addictive
mode.
In a way. People were, like, just addicted to getting in crashes.
Yeah, like, because it's such a, it's one of those features that, right, it appeals to us because we love violence and we love destruction, right? Like, that it appeals to us on that very basic level, but then also, right, like, they use it as a really good gameplay mechanic of, like, oh, yeah, take down your opponents, and when you get takedowns, you then build your... You build a multiplier to your boost, right? You then also, like, if you crash...
You can crash into your opponent
with your
takedown.
If you're
in
single player, right, and you crash, you press R1 and you slow motion do the after touch.
Yeah.
And you can steer yourself into other players. Then on top of that, right, there's crash mode, which is a mode built upon, causes as much destruction as possible, and rank up your score and try to make the biggest crash.
I was lucky enough to be able to be previewing that game and knowing the creators really well at the time, and I just remember even seeing a preview. I was like, oh my God, like, could not wait, and they delivered on everything they said, but it was, it almost felt revolutionary at the time. I mean, I know...
Yeah. I know, like, it's one of those things where I want to say it's revolutionary, even though I don't know how many games took influence from it, but still.
It's weird because, like, it added crashing to racing, but you got to remember, the racing alone was awesome arcade racing, and it just felt so fast and so good. There were a lot of racing games like Gran Turismo and Need for Speed, but they all had their own angle, but Burnout just felt so viciously fast.
It nailed
its strength.
It nailed its gameplay, and it also nailed its personality. Yeah. Like, with the soundtrack and with DJ... Crap, which DJ was it? Was it DJ Stryker?
Oh, I forget. It's a name like that. I forget about
There's
that.
There's like a billion DJs from that era.
Yeah.
But DJ Atomica?
That's a good...
Or was that SSX?
I don't think it... That sounds like SSX.
It's a DJ.
Anyway, Burnout 3 Takedown. Holy crap. Great pick.
Thanks.
I would say that both Portal and Portal 2 are 10 out of 10.
Thank you. That's one of the ones I was looking at.
But if I had to pick one here, I'm just going to go Portal.
Oh, okay.
No,
simple Portal.
Put two on my
list. Would you not say Orange Box?
You could.
Mario All-Stars Plus World is the number one game of all time. Like, it is what it is. But I think that Portal 1 is just such a perfect experience, enhanced mostly by its brevity. It doesn't last long enough to have anything bad about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Every single room builds on the last, introduces something cool. It was a gameplay experience unlike anything we've ever experienced before. And the end. Like, it's just like, whoa, there's a twist. You didn't need to go and do that shit. You know what I mean?
And it's the most impossible. If you didn't live in that moment, to even try to make you understand that, like, what it was that, like, when people finished that game and it was The Cake is a Lie and the song and GLaDOS, you were like, I remember having not had it spoiled, but like I remember talking to Damon. He's like, "You got to play this this weekend. You got to do this thing." Like it's and like sitting down. And like usually when that kind of shit happens, like it's not gonna live up to expectations, and being so blown away by that game. Yeah, and that's the thing of like I remember it being such a thing of oh, it's super short, and that being like a knock against it at the time because we weren't used to that, right? We weren't used to like downloadable games that were that short, or can a game be under 2 hours or whatever and still be a thing?
Yeah. And on top of that, just the concept of it, like they created something that is the fucking dopest shit I've ever heard. You know what I mean? Like these portals, like it's just so simple now. You think about it, like, oh yeah, portal. They redefine like that is a pop culture thing.
Yeah.
That this game introduced.
Yeah. I'm with you. Portal, the first one, like I remember being on YouTube and like I didn't own the game until later on PC, but I remember like watching Let's Play videos and people being all about Portal and me wanting to know like, okay, what's the deal, right? And like seeing the concept of it, I was already in, but then like following along to the end and like the conspiracy theories that came with it with like Ratman and like all these other stuff, right? I thought made it awesome. And Cake is Alive being like a meme and all this stuff. And like the ending music, Still Alive being a slapper.
Being a slap,
yeah.
But dude, the thing there too is that you know, one of my favorite things about video games is when they're so good on their own rights, but then how you want to play them is also fun. Mm-hmm. Grand Theft Auto is a perfect example where it's like, cool, there's a story that's amazing. There's like missions that are super fun, whatever. But just running around and trying to get 6 stars and just being an asshole is its own experience, you know, trying to like take cars and just go off sweet jumps. Why? Just because it's fucking fun. Yeah. And Portal has that moment where it's just like you start to realize the rules of the world and you're just like, wait, so you're telling me that if I put this there and there, the momentum will get me so that I can jump and, like, go farther? What? And it's like, you're not trying to break the game, but you're trying to use the game just to have fun in ways that you're not necessarily like, supposed to be doing.
I don't think there's a single person who's played through Portal who didn't do the thing where they shot the portal in the ceiling, shot it down, and just, like, kept going in an infinite
accelerated
loop. That's, like, a requirement if you're playing that game.
Yeah.
All right. I was gonna just to end on that one was the subtlety. You pretty much said it, but to stick on it, like, it wasn't just that they made the portals, because I feel like people probably had tried that, and it was how they managed to do it with those precise physics and ideas, like you're saying, and like meaning just the idea of going through a portal was one thing, but the way the boxes fell, and the acceleration on things, and how it actually all worked, and then they added the style on top of it, and then that was why everybody was like, okay, everything was done just perfectly, you know.
Yeah, if you want to talk about
might
perfect,
be a perfect game, actually,
I'm just gonna say like I think it might be in the running for like a game that is a perfect game. Like, that's one of the ones I'll probably
put
out there.
It's funny. I didn't even mean to say that. It says, like, let up. I'm like, you know what? Maybe this is...
You know what?
You know maybe what? Portal's perfect.
Portal
say
is perfect.
I'm picking that one.
All right, finally.
One more round around the table for a game that we think is a 10 out of 10.
Oh. There's still yeah, I know. Who do you want to give a nod
to? Use some fun ones. You know what I mean?
I have one that I'm surprised we haven't said yet.
I got one. No one
throw it out, and then we won't count it.
Okay, Last of Us.
Okay, yeah.
It's the easy one.
It is an easy one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that's one of those probably on everybody's list, right?
Yeah. It's on
but I'm glad you put it out there.
It's funny. Thing. I cleared my mind and Last of Us wasn't on my list.
Really?
Yeah. I love Last of Us, obviously.
That was like the first one on my list.
But I think it's one of those things, and this is back to the IGN and personal lists and all this stuff, where I was like, the multiplayer. And I know people either love or hate the multiplayer.
People love that.
I know.
It's an amazing multiplayer.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see if you get it on the part two. Oh, you're not.
You're not.
It's garbage.
9 out of 10.
Trying to get a little more over here
for you. Weird, Greg.
I don't think it's weird.
Unexpected.
Anthem. No, I'm fucking But I do think there's not a snowball's chance in hell of this being on any of your lists. It's super recent, but I think it's a 10 out of 10. Concrete Genie. I think Concrete Genie is a magical little game, and it's that thing where the further I get away from it, the more I still find myself going back and thinking, fuck, I wish I could play that all over again. I wish I could do that whole platinum, that whole experience, the whole story. Like, again, I think the cutscenes are so beautiful. It's what we're talking about earlier, where it's, like, short enough that it doesn't wear out its welcome. Like, I was never like, ugh, I got to backtrack. I got to do this. I got to do that. Like, I loved existing in that world, both finding new genies and using them to solve puzzles, but then running around and getting the collectibles. Like, you know, it does this thing, and this is a spoiler for Concrete Genie. That's not like a story spoiler. You know, you play that game for hours and then eventually unlock your paint skates. So you're skating around on paint. And so all of a sudden, traversal is faster and different. And if they just put in a free mode to go paint skate, I'm sure so many people would go do it, just run around. The VR mode they put in for it is also super relaxing and super chill. That's the thing. The game overall is just like a I call it a meditative experience, right, when I reviewed it. Like, yeah. It is peaceful to play that game. And there's challenges and there's, you know, puzzles to figure out. And there were definitely times of me like, fuck, how do I know what it wants me to do. Why can I not do that? Why can I not make my genie do what I want it to do? But inevitably, I found it on my own. What never got me so frustrated that I was like, fuck this game or anything. Like, it's a beautiful, heartwarming game.
Hmm. Also, that was very unexpected.
That's what I did.
I don't know, this is totally out of the blue, but I don't know if it would have made anybody else's list, is StarCraft. That just, like, was one of those games, you know, maybe it was at the time of my PC gaming love, you know, in the late 90s. But holy cow, StarCraft just coming out, being the RTS with the style, with the everything. And really, you know, you look back in Blizzard's history, and certainly World of Warcraft, like, became just monstrous, and I think a lot of what defined them, but man, StarCraft at that moment, and even looking back, like, just, I feel like, yeah, like, if we didn't have StarCraft then, like, would we be where we're at with things like Dota and League of Legends today? And, you know, so StarCraft for sure. Anybody else StarCraft fans? I'm not feeling any vibe on that one.
I get it, but
I would never argue. I know it's impact, but it was never my game.
I will also throw out there, in a shameful admission, it was the I hate cheating, by the way.
Oh, he cheated.
So Battle.net was a thing, and that was another incredible part, right? Being able to log online, you know, with your plugged-in telephone and, you know, with the face friends all over the world. Yeah. Getting on a Battle.net. So people were, like, cheating because I was getting crushed all the time. I was like, they, like, have clairvoyance. Like, how do people know where I'm at? And going on the, you know, bulletin boards and in chat rooms, finding out, like, oh, there's, like, this file hack thing that people are using. And I was so frustrated staying up, you know, at 2 a.m. doing stuff that I was like, screw it. You could remove the fog and see where people were at. And, you know, of course, some they eventually patched out. But I was like, I want to play this game, but I have to use it. So anyway, the only game that I've ever done something with. I look back and wish I hadn't participated in that problem, you know. But it was super broken.
Bless.
I'm going to say the names of two games. I'm going to have you guys choose which one I talk about.
Okay.
Because these games are opposites. Nier Automata or NBA Street Volume 2.
NBA Street Volume 2.
Dude, yes. That game, it's similar to Burnout 3 for me, where it's like, it's just the perfect, like, the gameplay loop of that game is just perfect, right? Like, the conceit of it is ridiculous, but it works so well of, like, yeah, we're gonna make a game where you're playing NBA, right, with NBA players, right? 3v3 street basketball, but then when you do tricks, that fills up a meter for you to get your game breaker and then execute, and then you get plus points or minus points based on which game breakers you execute and how you execute them. It's so good. It's such a perfect gameplay loop. But then also, like, the attitude, vibe, and style of that game, what's his name? Crap, another DJ.
I'll look it up.
And he's an actual real one, too. He's, like, part of Rocksteady Crew.
Flex.
Cucumber Slice. DJ Cucumber Slice. Bobito Garcia.
Yes.
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 Yep. I don't know how I retained that information.
From downtown.
Yeah.
It's J.U. Ice.
That game has so much good attitude and so much positive attitude. And it,
like, and that motherfucking soundtrack.
Oh, the soundtrack is
six
so good.
Six songs to rule them all. Dude. They will never get old. They reminisce over you, baby.
Dude, when that instrumental kicks in, right, at the very beginning, it's like, dun 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 dun. Like, as soon as you hear that, you're like, oh, it's time. I'm about to dunk on some fool. Right? It's such a good soundtrack for even how little songs are on there, because it feels like you're hearing the same song.
I literally think there's six songs.
Yeah, but they're all, like,
they're all incredible, man. The other thing there is, I do feel like, earlier I was talking about Guitar Hero 3 being the one. I feel like NBA Street Volume 2 is so much better than 1.
Mm.
So much better than 3.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it had it all. Yeah. It did everything it needed to do.
The Street series across NBA, FIFA, and NFL, mainly NBA and NFL, because I didn't love the FIFA Street games, even though I know a lot of people out there do love them. Those games are up there, man, for, like, great games on the PS2 and that generation of consoles specifically, but even of all time, right? Like, the Street games, I feel like, don't get enough credit for how good they are and how well put together they are as far as, like, their gameplay, like, as competitive games, right? I, like, would play NFL Street Volume 2 and NFL Street 1 with the homies all the time, and it never felt like, oh, yeah, this is unbalanced or this is weird. Like there are probably, like, some things in there as far as teams you can choose that can unbalance the game, but the back and forth of those games is so good and so satisfying and so fun. Like, I'll play anybody NBA Street Volume 2 right now and be very excited about it, because that game for me is like an everlasting gobstopper of just fun and goodness. And so that game for me is a 10 out of 10 easily.
Yeah, that game felt so good, especially in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It just It didn't even make sense. It looked so good. It animated so well. Yeah, just everything about it was, out the was just fantastic.
Yeah.
Where did it go?
Yeah, for real.
They tried. They made home court, and it just
same as SSX.
Where is home esports
took
big?
All of the freaking EA fun
sports.
Out of it, man.
It did. Esports big needs to come back. I think that'll. I think that's like a saving grace. Yeah. I think if they want goodwill, they bring back EA Sports big.
Yes, I just want to see the opening E3. Animation.
Big and Skate 4. We heard you.
Listen, stop voting us the worst company ever.
Yeah.
The last one I'm going to add is an easy one. Street Fighter 2.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Fighting.
Just straight up, too. I had Turbo on my list.
It's like
list,
the chess
like,
of video games.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just feel like it is infinitely playable. The cast of characters is fantastic. The identity that this game has. Like, that's the thing is, like, we talk about games being, you know, innovative and, like, revolutionary or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, just the simple idea of what is a fighting game? You think of Street Fighter 2, mm-hmm. you know? The health bars, just the way it's presented, the simplicity of the characters, but the depth of having to master all of them, and also just how unique each one of them is. Even though there really is only like three or four classes of characters that once you understand the motions of the quarter circle punch or whatever, you can kind of play as a majority of the cast this way or that, they feel different. Like
yeah.
It's like Ken and Ryu feel different, even mm-hmm. though they are so similar. And you can appreciate that on the most shallow level or the deepest level possible. And on top of that, there's the backgrounds of the levels. There's the music to each character. There's
God,
the bosses.
So iconic.
Yeah, it's iconic, and it stands the test of time. You know.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, that has been some of our 10 out of 10 games. This is a fun one.
We still got a post show to talk about. Are we talking more of our things?
This.
Are we going to see what the kids said?
We'll hang out with the kids.
We
want to
see the comments
we'll
on YouTube. What are theirs, right?
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a lot of good ones. I want some spicy takes. Leave them in the comments. I want to know, what are the crazy games you think are 10 out of 10? Yeah,
Tiger Woods PGA Tour 2004.
Honestly, there was a Madden game.
There was. I know. There was other stuff that we didn't get to bring up.
That's what I was thinking.
It's Madden 04 and Madden 10 that are the best ones. I would say PGA Tour...
It's like 2003 or 2004, somewhere
yeah,
in there.
That sounds about
right.
Yeah,
I played
right.
the shit out of Madden 4. Oh, 04.
Such a good.
Is that the one
game.
With the. Actually, in the show, we'll talk about the post show.
We're going to the post show, baby. Until next time, love you guys.